Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.byteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my very special guest is Dean Sleiter. He is author of Natural Meditation, A Guide to Effortless Meditative Practice. Throw out every idea you think you know about meditation, including that it can only be learned in expensive classes, that it requires achieving a completely blank mind, or that meditation can only be done properly by people who can check of certain spiritual prerequisites. Excuse me. In fact, Dean Sleiter, who has been teaching meditation since 1970, says all that we need to utilize the life-changing properties of meditation is already inside us. Meditation is a natural state where we can simply connect with the awareness that exists inside us all. And achieving that state is easier than you ever dared hope. In his book, Natural Meditation, Dean offers tips, history, and philosophy for those interested in connecting with their inner selves in the simplest way possible. Dean has taught natural meditation since 1970, and he has given talks and led workshops throughout the United States. He has appeared in various media, including Oprah and Friends Radio and National Public Radio, and his work has been featured in the New York Times, USA Today, and Publishers Weekly, which called his writing joyously entertaining. And having read his book, I have to tell you that it is very entertaining. For more information, you can visit the website, naturalmeditationbook.com, and I do have a direct link to that website in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome Dean to the show. Good day, Dean.
Hi, Robert.
I'm really happy to have you here today. Now, I thought I knew a lot about meditation until I read your book. So there's a lot.
You know. I quickly disabused you of that notion.
You did. Yeah, it was. And as I mentioned in the introduction, entertaining. It was entertaining. You really interjected some wonderful humor throughout the book, and in some of the questions that many people have regarding meditation, you put a lot of the myths to rest, and really did it with some clarity and simplicity. So for that, I was very pleased.
Great, thank you. I mean, this has been my work for a long time. It's getting to be an embarrassingly long time, 40 something years. But
I'm saying that is a long time to be dealing with this topic.
Yeah, I know. But, let's just say my skill set is extremely limited. I can't fix a carburetor, can't throw a football. All I can do is talk and write. And other than that, I'm, out of the gene pool. And fortunately, very early in my life, in my teens, really, I intersected with some wonderful teachers who showed me how easy it is to settle into what you've been looking for, all the time. You stand in line at Ben and Jerry's, and there's the menu, and you're looking at all those flavors. What you're actually looking for is boundless happiness, boundless freedom. There's fancy words for it like nirvana, the kingdom of heaven within you. That's what you're looking for, really, in every moment. But when you look up at that Ben and Jerry's menu, it's not on the menu, so you settle for Cherry Garcia. Pretty much, that's the story of our lives. We're looking for that. We all have this intuition that there's this state that is this transcendent state, this sublime state, this state of freedom beyond freedom, happiness beyond happiness. That we somehow know that it should exist, it must exist, and we feel somehow that it's our birthright. We're supposed to have that. That if we're not having that, something's wrong. And we just keep going around pretty much settling for the closest possible substitute we can find in every moment.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And, you know, the one thing that I really liked about the book is you talk about just, you know, that is something that natural awareness is innate. I mean, it's within us, and it's just a matter of recognizing it, you know, and
right.
You know, not creating it. So.
Exactly. And you know, if you think about it that way, it's really kind of obvious. If it's really boundless, if it's really infinite, it has to be everywhere. You know, if I were to say to you, the boundless, the infinite, nirvana is everywhere, pervades the whole universe except this one little point on the tip of my fingernail. That can't be true. Because by definition, then, we're making it finite. Therefore, it must be everywhere. Therefore, it must be within us. The kingdom of heaven must be within us. So it's not a matter of creating it or cultivating or anything that we can build or create or manufacture is artificial. Anything, you know, what goes up must come down. Anything that's built, if you're trying to build your nirvana out of some kind of mood or out of some kind of belief or out of your mastery of fancy yoga postures, you know, sooner or later that's going to come tumbling down again like everything else we build.
Yeah, very much. Now, one of the things that you, when you start your book, you talk about an eye awareness or eye sense. If you wouldn't mind, because it seems like that's kind of where it all starts, really. And so if you wouldn't mind kind of sharing it with the listeners, you know, what you mean by that and you know, where we can start with that.
Yeah. And you're absolutely right. The eye sense is where it all starts, and also where it all ends. Everything,
oh boy.
everything else is the journey, you know. There's a line from T.S. Eliot where he says something about, you know, ending where we began, but recognizing it for the first time. So Everything begins with the sense of I. You know, before you knew your name, before you knew if you were a boy or a girl, there was this innate sense of just simply I, the experiencer. There's all these experiences that flash before us. For instance, right now you could, and I invite the listeners to do this, if you turn your head to the left, not if you're driving though, but you can, if you're at a red light, you can do this. Turn your head to the left. And now you see a whole scene. There's a bunch of visual impressions that you're aware of. You're seeing certain objects, certain colors, certain shapes. Okay, now turn your head to the right. Now there's a whole different world of colors, shapes, objects that you're aware of. So two completely different experiences that you're aware of, but what remains the same? What remains the same is awareness itself. You're aware of different stuff, but the thread that runs through it is awareness itself. We could say the I that experiences all the different phenomena. Now, for another little field test here, try scrunching your shoulders up into an awkward position. Now, you're aware of this awkward, uncomfortable position. Now drop them again into a completely comfortable, relaxed position, and you're aware of that. Now, once again, two completely different experiences that we're aware of, but the awareness is the same. And here's a way we can prove it. Scrunch up your right shoulder into an awkward position while you keep your left shoulder in a relaxed position. So, see, awareness can be aware of those two completely contradictory experiences at the same time. And by the way, you can drop your shoulder. So, you know, think back to your seventh birthday, what it felt like to be in that excited little seven-year-old body, and you're blowing out the candles, and you're anticipating, you know, boy, are you going? Am I going to get the G.I. Joe or am I going to get the Barbie? And that's just the most urgent, most important thing that you could possibly think of. Now, flash forward to when you were 17. Barbie and G.I. Joe are not so important. What's important is, you know, I don't know, are you going to get laid? you're looking down at your body. Now it's a completely different body. You've got a different voice. You've got hair in new places. Instead of hearing birthday, happy birthday, you're, you know, hearing your maybe loud music that you and your friends are playing, hanging out at the pizza joint or whatever the heck it is. And now think about last night as you were falling asleep, or this morning as you were having breakfast. All these different experiences. Yet there's a sense of a thread that runs through them all, the same eye that's aware of it, even as the body is completely different. The mind, the thoughts, the emotions are completely different. The eye that's aware of those things with all their changing qualities remains the same. And that's because the eye has no qualities. The eye has no qualities, and that's what makes it boundless. That is exactly when we're looking for that boundless happiness, that boundlessness, that infinity, the one who's looking for it is what we're looking for. So Meditation is simply, very simply, and I hope this doesn't sound philosophical. It's not philosophy at all. It's very simple pointing out of common sense day-to-day experiences. Meditation is very simply that temporarily we sit, we can close the eyes, and for a little while, for a few minutes, instead of having the attention going out on all these objects of experience that are constantly changing, just let the awareness settle within itself. And notice I use the word let the awareness settle. Most people think of meditation as something you try to do. I have to make the thoughts stop, and then I can settle down. Or I have to feel spiritual, then I can settle down. I have to concentrate, then I'll settle down. And all those things are difficult. I can't do any of them. I still can't concentrate to save my life. The good news is you don't have to, because once you're gently guided in that direction, the settling down of the mind is as natural as a feather floating out of the sky, which is the illustration on the cover of my book. Feathers floating out of the sky, and, you know, depending on what's going on with the air, the currents, the temperature, it'll drift to the left for a little while, then it'll drift to the right for a little while, it'll drift to the left. But none of that matters. Sooner or later, gravity is going to take over, and the thing will settle to the ground. So in the same way, we stop worrying about, am I concentrating? Do I have thoughts? Do I not have thoughts? Doesn't matter. We allow the gravity of the mind, the natural pull of the mind toward greater satisfaction to just take over. And we take our hands off the steering wheel. We let the thing auto-drive.
Yeah, excuse me. Yeah, I agree. Now, one of the things, you know, you kind of talked about this, but I kind of want to frame it in a way that you presented it in the book. You indicated that there are really several different approaches to meditation. One was the hard, the soft, and the natural. And you, which you just spoke about, you know, incorporated, you know, each of those. But if you wouldn't mind kind of, framing it as, because I really enjoyed how you presented hard, soft, and natural, because to me it was very distinctly, for me, it organized it in a nice, tidy way.
Yeah. Most of the approaches to meditation, that when people think of meditation, they're thinking of the hard approaches, which is concentrate, don't let the mind be active, don't let the body be active, you have to sit still like a stone Buddha. It's very difficult. I actually started off way, way, way long time ago as a student of Zen. I didn't last a week because you have to. That's a hard approach. You have to sit still. You know, if you move it, your nose itches, you can't scratch it, or they whack you with a stick. So that's the hard approach. And that is unnatural. You know, when we buy natural food, the idea is that nothing artificial is added to it. So the heart approach is unnatural. It's like bitter medicine. You know, the stuff tastes awful, but you gulp it, you hold your nose, you gulp it down as fast as you can in the hopes that somewhere down the line you're going to feel better. Now, the soft approaches are like sweet, sugary medicine. And this is like listening to New Age tapes and, oh, now you're feeling so good. Now your toes are in the surf in Hawaii. Or now you're feeling love for everyone. And in other words, just building up, again, building up something artificial, building up a mood of spirituality, building up and it's something, and if you've met people who do a lot of that kind of practice, you know, you can tell. It's almost like they're walking around on eggshells or balancing some fragile jar on top of their head, like, oh, don't talk too loud, you'll break my spiritual mood.
Yeah.
So if we take away the hard, because it's artificial, and we take away the soft, because it's artificial, what we're left with is natural meditation. And it doesn't leave much. It's very nicely kind of cleared the decks for us. And what's left is this allowing the mind to settle down in a very natural, very straightforward way. And we can use, I mentioned in the book, as you know, different vehicles for settling down. One chapter I talk about meditating with sounds such as mantras or natural sound. Another I talk about meditating by placing the attention on the heart center. Another I talk about meditating by placing the attention on the open sky with your eyes open, which is a favorite Tibetan technique. So all these are different vehicles, and I present several of them in the book so that people get a chance to sort of test drive the vehicles and see which ones they feel most comfortable in. But what's more important than the particular vehicle you choose is the way you drive the vehicle. You know, a lot of people approach this as, you know, driving the vehicle of meditation like it's, you know, they're auditioning for Fast and Furious. You know, I gotta run all the thoughts off the road. I gotta run all the noises off the road, and that ain't it. The most effective method for driving the vehicle is just with the lightest possible touch, not focusing on the sound of the heart center or whatever, just gently resting the attention on it. We use it to lose it. By gently resting the attention on it, we find that in its own time, it kind of fades away. It dissolves the way a cough drop dissolves in your mouth. And then what you're left with is the I, this awareness, which you've been all along. Just you've taken out of all the, you know, panorama of different experiences, you've taken one experience, the mantra, the heart center, the sky, resting your attention on that gently, and then just letting it melt away in its own time.
Yeah, you know, I had had one of those rough nights, and later on we're going to talk a little bit about sleep, you know, meditating into sleep, excuse me, because I don't want to talk about that. But last night I did the hard and the soft approach, both of them. Neither of them worked. Neither worked. So, yeah. But tonight,
yeah.
If I
have Robert, let me say something about the hard approach, because there's so much of that out there. And so many, I mean, if I had, as they say, if I had a dollar for every time someone has said to me, oh, you write about meditation, you teach meditation, I tried to meditate, but it was so hard. Okay? Now, the thing is, it's not quite accurate to say, I tried to meditate, but it was hard. It would be more accurate to say, I tried to meditate, so it was hard. In other words, if you work hard at it, surprise, it's hard work. Okay? If you take it easy, it's easy.
Yeah.
But there's so much of that, you know, if anyone says to you, this is something I say in the book somewhere, when someone says to you, oh, yeah, no, to do really serious meditation, you have to sit, you have to concentrate, you can't allow thoughts to come into your mind, ask them two questions. One, okay, do some quick math. How many total hundreds of hours have you spent sitting on your meditation cushion trying to make your mind silent? And out of all those hundreds of hours, for how many seconds have you succeeded? I think that'll pretty quickly put an end to the conversation.
It puts it into perspective, for sure.
It does. Now, the good news is that the whole idea of making the mind silent, of getting rid of the thoughts, restraining the thoughts, is like looking at the ocean and saying, oh, all those waves, I gotta straighten out all those waves, and taking a big iron and trying to go all over the surface of the ocean, flattening out the waves with your iron. It's an endless task. You get one flattened out and five more pop up somewhere else. You will never, I promise you, you will never succeed at that task. The good news is all you have to do is just allow yourself to naturally sink down into the water. 3 inches below the surface, it's silent. No matter how many waves are going on, and you're vaguely aware, oh yeah, those waves, those thoughts, all that going on up there someplace. But I'm beneath all that in this vast, boundless ocean of awareness, of which the thoughts, that's just something, some expression up there on the surface.
Yeah, I like that visual. That's what the one that I'm going to, you know, incorporate into my natural way of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I have to laugh. You know, you talked about when you were trying that Zen approach, mm-hmm. and how hard it was. I mean, you know, the hard approach, and the scratching, the itching of the nose, and I roared when I read about the one. That it said, I guess you had a Maharishi who said it's better 5 seconds of scratching than 5 minutes of itching. And I just thought,
right.
You know, I don't have to worry, you know, about maintaining this, you know, worry about ignoring, you know, my aches
right.
and pains or my itches and, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Maintaining that perfect posture. You know, so many people think meditation is sitting in this perfect posture and sitting motionless, like you're getting points for that. You know, who's giving you points? No one is grading you, with the possible exception of yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, very much so. Well, you know, one of the things also I like about your book is that you often kind of flip things around. Like, for example, one of your chapters is called Unexpect the Expected. It's like, you know, okay, we are always told to expect the unexpected, but here you
mm-hmm.
flip it around. And,
mm-hmm.
And of course, that immediately for the reader kind of sets things apart. It's like, oh my God, I can't, I have to actually think about what I'm reading now. You know what I mean? I just can't, you know, assume what's going to follow is what, you know what I expect.
Right.
In that particular one, you talk a lot about the expectations that we have, and that it's kind of really important, I guess, to get to that eye awareness or eye sense to eliminate those expectations that we have, or minimize them.
I would almost agree with that. A better way to say it, because you know what, those expectations are going to keep coming up. You know, after a lifetime of thinking, oh, you have to work hard at stuff, because, you know, the truth is everything else in life, we do have to work, or almost everything else, we do have to work hard. The almost everything else in life, the results that you get are directly proportional to the amount of effort you invest. Meditation is the one thing where the results you get are inversely proportional to the amount of effort that you invest. So naturally, those expectations, oh yeah, I'm supposed to be working hard, or oh, thoughts are supposed to go away, or oh, my breath is supposed to do this, that, those expectations will continue to come up. What I would say, instead of eliminate them, which would be also artificial, or try to minimize them, which also is artificial, is simply recognize them for what they are. Which is,
okay.
Oh, those are just more thoughts. The thought that I'm supposed to get rid of thoughts, that's just a thought. And the way to deal with all thoughts in meditation is something, as I explain in the book, it's something you're already expert at. Anytime you go to a restaurant, a busy restaurant, you're sitting at the table with your companions, having your nice conversation. There's 20 other conversations going on at the 20 neighboring tables. Now, do you have to eliminate them? Do you have to minimize them? You know, if you suddenly go, oh, how can I concentrate on my conversation when all these people are yakking away? Shh, quiet, everybody. then there's a problem, but you're creating the problem. The problem is not the situation as it is. It's you're resisting the situation as it is. So you don't have to concentrate on your conversation. You don't have to focus on it. You just have it. And all the other conversations, they're there in the background, and you just ignore them. And we all know how to do that. So this is the way to deal with thoughts and meditation, sounds, all the stuff that people think are problems. They're not problems. They're just there. They're like, they're part of the background. They're part of the wallpaper.
Yeah. Yeah, those three big words, just ignore thoughts. You know, that's one of the things that I definitely took away from the book when it comes time to dealing with that. You know, Dean, we're already about halfway through the show. we're kind of like zipping right along here. I want to invite someone to. We're going to take a short break for about 90 seconds here. I do want to invite anyone if they would like to call in and ask Dean any questions. You can call in at 619-789-4359. Also, for those of you who are listening live in the chat room, if you have a question that you would like for me to pose to Dean, feel free to type it in, and we will be sure to get that. And then, Dean, when we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit about the idea of dead air and live air, you know, when it came time to...
Okay.
I believe it was under the naturally... chapter in your book, because I really liked that explanation. So everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back in about 90 seconds.
This is Robert Sharp from Bringing Inspiration to Earth. There are several ways for a win-win situation where you can support our work and you receive a quality product. You can purchase the book or ebook of Joy Potential or It's No Secret Spirituality Bites. Each book has helped readers shift their perspective away from negativity towards a happier, less stressful life. Or you can shop at our wellness store, where we offer essential oils, personal care, and wellness products. I am a very frugal shopper, and these are high-quality items I use that really contribute to my well-being. Or you can purchase our amazing nature photo greeting cards. These are great all-occasion, unique 5x7 folding cards. They're my most popular nature photos, and everyone who has received one raves about the scene. All options are available at our website, www.biteradio.me, and I am very appreciative of your support of our efforts in the work of our special radio guests.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us again today. My very special guest is Dean Sleiter, author of Natural Meditation, A Guide to Effortless Meditative Practice. And again, you can find out more about Dean and his book by visiting the website, naturalmeditationbook.com. And again, I do have a direct link to that website in the show page description. Okay, we're back, Dean.
Hi.
Okay, great. Before we go on to talking about dead air and live air, we do have a caller here from Nebraska who has a question for you that I think it would be really good to address. So, hello, caller.
Hi, this is Diane. Thank you so much for taking my call.
You're welcome,
Diane. And my question was, I was wondering if you had some suggestions for people that just tend to be pretty tightly wound. I've always been just really intuitive since I was very, very young. I sense energy around people and places. And it's just, even when I have done the pillow sitting, you know, where I really work on meditation in the way that a lot, what you talked about earlier, a lot of people think it has to be, I would calm down somewhat, but still just have a really hard time kind of getting into that meditative state.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, no, it's a great question, Diane. One thing I would say is that if you're particularly tightly wound, rather than go straight into sitting meditation, you might want to do some transitional stuff. Do a little yoga, stretching, this kind of thing. And are you familiar at all with pranayama, breathing exercise?
No, I'm not.
Okay. And I do discuss that in the book. There's a wonderful traditional practice called pranayama, which means extension of the breath. And there's a couple of different forms of it, which I do walk through. So it's a little bit technical to try to do on the radio here.
Sure.
But it's quite simple to practice once you've done it once or twice. And by using the breath in this special way for a couple of minutes at the beginning of a meditation session, it's really, really effective at just cooling your jets.
Okay.
And it just really, really settles things down. So, I would very highly recommend that. I've worked, by the way, a whole lot of my career of teaching meditation has been with high school students and with convicts in maximum security. So I know about working with people who are tightly wound.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're so welcome.
Thank you, Diane, for calling.
You bet.
Okay. Well, great. Yeah, that is a good question. And, you know, we're going to, in a few minutes, get to, you had a couple sections you call it the fine print, both outer and inner. And it sounds like that particular one may have been one of those, I'm not sure if it would be an outer or an inner one, but we'll get to that in a minute. Let's go to the idea of dead air and live air. You know, this, you have a section called Naturally, and
mm-hmm.
If you wouldn't mind sharing with the listeners exactly, you know, what that's all about, because I really enjoyed the description that you had.
Sure. In fact, I think I'll read this out of the book. Since I worked so hard crafting
these sentences.
Okay, so Uncle Dean's going to read us a story. Not long ago, my wife and I took a trip to Mammoth Lakes near Yosemite and hiked up through the woods to McLeod Lake, which nestles at the foot of spectacular, craggy, volcanic mountains. It was a sparkling, windless October day, and we were the only ones there. Silence. No cars, no airplanes, and at 9,000 feet, not even a bird. Neither of us felt like speaking. But when we compared notes later, we both said how struck we were by the depth, the vibrancy of the silence. In the world of radio and TV production, if 2 seconds go by without someone talking, it's called dead air. And is to be avoided at all costs, no matter how frantically the hosts must jabber. But what we experienced at McLeod Lake was what we might call live air, a reminder that silence is not flat and dry, but juicy and alive. It's not just a vacuum, not just the absence of motion and sound, but a fullness, a fertile presence, that is somehow the necessary background of motion and sound, perhaps somehow even its source. So that's what we settle into in meditation, really, is that live air, which is the I, that I sense within us, and which has been there all along as the background of all the noise and activity of our lives. But through repeatedly dipping into that through meditation, it starts to become, it starts moving from the background into the foreground. So that no matter how much is going on, you know, after you know, some time of meditation, you know, we practice over some weeks, some months, and more, no matter how crazy things are in our outer lives, that's, we're rooted in that silence all the time.
Yeah, you know, very much. And, you know, I, from there, you also talked about you do walks at night, you know, and, you know, talked about how, you know, during those walks, you know, you'll witness people walking their pets, their dogs and that kind of thing. But, yeah. But you know, they're busy looking at their cell phones or that kind of thing. And
yeah, these days, yeah, you know, I've been walking at night for decades. I just love something about that when the world is nice and quiet. And just in recent years, almost everyone I see walking their dog, they've got their head down at that telltale 45-degree angle and that, you know, blue-gray light bathing their face. And it's kind of a shame. I just think that they're, you know, these cell phones, I mean, they're great. I love, you know, as soon as the iPhone 6 came out, I was there the second day getting mine. They're miraculous gadgets, but they're also, if we let them be, they're windows into continual distraction. In fact, I recently wrote a piece, you know, I blog on the Huffington Post, and you can look this up. I wrote a piece a little while back called Meditating with the iPhone Zero. And I talked about how you see how people have become so compulsive now. If there's a, you know, 30-second lull in their conversation, you know, that idea of dead air again, or, you know, they're walking down a sidewalk, they have to wait for a red light. They, instead of just, oh, let me just settle into being this here, instead, you know, whip it out and check for messages. So my suggestion on that, how to turn that into meditation, is the next time that happens and you feel that impulse, oh, I'm going to check for messages, don't do it. Now, when you decide, okay, I'm going to not do it, and I guarantee you right now some of the readers, the listeners are feeling this, there's a kind of a feeling of anxiety. Oh, but I'm going to miss something. Or oh, now I'm going to be here in the dead air. That's fine. Let that wave of anxiety happen. Feel that wave completely. Don't try to restrain it. Let that wave completely swell and crest and then break in its own time. And then on the other side of that wave, after that wave crashes, you're going to experience something called peace, silence, liberation.
Boy, that's great. Now, for me, I'm a morning walker. You know, to me, that is my time. And, you know, I mean, but I could relate, you know, very much to the same kind of situation that you had. And, as a matter of fact, you talked about, you know, hearing mockingbirds. You know, we've got here in Myrtle Beach, excuse me, where I live, mockingbirds everywhere. But it was just yesterday morning, I was... Typically, when I walk, I have camera in hand. I love taking photos, but also have iPhone with, you know, iPad. I mean, the music going on and kind of shuffling the music. And then one morning, it was, I mean, the birds were just going crazy. And I thought, wait a minute, you know, I don't need to have this music on. And it was amazing, but I was literally drawn to some of the most beautiful birds, you know, that, I mean, I had actually heard, you know, and kind of camera in hand went chasing after the sound, you know, and, but it was wonderful. Captured some of some of my best photos. And to me, that was inspiring.
Yeah. You know, we're living in this just miraculous world. You know, the fact that we're alive, the fact that we're able to look around and see stuff and hear stuff and feel stuff and then encounter other beings and have conversations with them, it's so unlikely. You know, the universe is mostly, you know, space or dust or dark matter or something. You know what we are, it's just the Buddha. Actually, there's a story that the Buddha once was talking to his monks, and he put his thumb into the earth and pulled it up with just a little heap of dirt on his thumbnail. And he said, you know, if all the dirt in the world represents all the different kinds of beings that you could be born as: insects, fish, trees, rocks. Then the little heap of dirt here on my thumbnail represents your chances of being born as a human being.
Mm.
You know, so we're really just on this miraculous journey, and so, you know, it might behoove us to pay attention to it a little bit and just enjoy it as deeply as we can.
Yeah. I agree. There's just so much, and to me, nature is just it's a wonderful teacher. I mean, you know, I just every day it seems that I find something that is, you know, I'll just stare at it and then kind of just get my little message for the day, you know, and sometimes it's a caterpillar crossing a huge, you know, asphalt road thinking, my God, you know, look at the trip that they did, you know, and here I am complaining about the trip that I've been
right.
on, you know,
right.
and look at that little caterpillar, he's going to see some green pretty soon, you know, maybe I'll be seeing my green area pretty soon, you know, so,
right.
But that's, you know, that's, I think, you know, that's the wonderful aspect, and I thoroughly enjoyed, you know, that particular chapter. As we mentioned a little bit after talking with Diane, you know, you have a couple sections called fine print. One of them is fine print outer, and one of them is fine print inner. And to me, the idea of fine print, is that kind of like our little contract, and you got to read the fine print?
Right. And the two chapters on fine print, I mainly address the questions that people have asked me over the years of conducting meditation training and workshops and so forth. Inevitably, people ask, you know, what's the best position to sit in? What happens if I fall asleep? Is it okay to scratch if I itch? What happens if I have this kind of thought or that kind of thought? What happens? Why is it that sometimes my arm or my leg or my spine might twitch while I meditate, all of those things. And pretty much, you know, what I do is I go through and help you to check those boxes so you can basically stop worrying about that stuff. And then some of those things are, there are some practical things to know. For instance, sometimes people will say, gee, I feel that my body gets cool when I meditate. Why is that? And that's it can be a very real thing, because when the mind settles down and the body settles down along with it, the metabolic activity of the body tends to be reduced. And for some people, that'll be experienced as feeling cool. So I recommend, you know, have a sweater or a shawl or something close by.
Yeah, you know, and one of those also, one of them and the inner ones like that was, you also indicated that, you know, the idea of experiencing weird moods or feeling agitated or angry, and you know, to me, I was kind of, that was not something that I, you know, really kind of would ask, but that is something that I've experienced. And can you explain what happens when that occurs?
Yes, it's very common. This doesn't happen to everybody in every meditation, but it will happen to most people in some meditations, is that you're sitting there and you start feeling anxiety or fear or restlessness, or you might start laughing for no particular reason. You might start crying for no particular reason. And when this happens, you might think, what the heck is going on here? This is not what I'm meditating for my mind to become settled down, and now it's all this these odd moods are welling up here. Now, the reason that can happen sometimes is actually, that's a good thing. It is an indication of something taking place that we could call purification. My old teacher Maharishi Mahesh Yogi used to call it unstressing. And it has to do with like old junk in the nervous system, old junk in our consciousness that's now getting flushed out. It's sort of like the way one Tibetan Lama that I used to study with, the way he explained it is, if you take a rubber band and you twist it up really tight, That's like, you know, the way our consciousness, our nervous system gets twisted tight through the, you know, just the stresses of daily life, daily activity. Now, if you take that wound up rubber band and you put it on the table, on an empty table by itself, it starts to unwind. In the process of unwinding, it's going to do this little dance. It's going to sometimes, you know, jerk to the left, jerk to the right, dance around a little bit. Ultimately, what's happening is it's releasing all those knots. So that's a good thing. But if we don't understand what's going on here long term, and they're just looking at, gee, what's going on here in these last 5 minutes? I'm sitting here feeling anxiety, or I'm sitting here crying, or my why did my arm twitch like that? You know, then we're not going to understand the big picture. And by the way, when people go on meditation retreats, and I do have a chapter on retreats, and on meditation retreats, you meditate instead of for, you know, a little while, you know, 15, 20 minutes, something like that each day, you're meditating for hours a day. Now, usually I don't recommend that, doing that without guidance. You should be doing that on a guided retreat. And when that happens, one of the reasons that we retreat somewhere off in the woods or somewhere, you know, removed from our daily life is you tend to go through a lot of that unwinding very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. That whole emotional discharge, I mean, I found it just enlightening, you know, recognizing it for what it is. And now, the one thing, I just want to give the listeners a little bit of example of your humor, but with also some, you know, honest information behind it. And that was one of the questions that you addressed in the Fine Print Inner was someone asking, saying that some people claim that they can achieve the same effects by taking psychedelic drugs. Am I wasting my time with meditation when I can just drop some acid? I laughed at that one. I thought, okay.
Right.
But you had a really great movie trailer kind of explanation of that. Would you mind sharing that? Because I think that's, you know, there are people out there who wonder about that, even though it wasn't me. But others.
Yeah, I know, Robert, but you've got this friend, and he took some drugs.
Exactly.
And as I say there, we're now in a better position to answer that question than we were back in the 60s. A whole lot of people, a whole lot of the present generation of kind of senior teachers of meditation and yoga and Buddhism. I mean, you know, I was hanging around the Haight-Ashbury, you know, I was on Haight Street in San Francisco in 1967. And, you know, so I certainly experimented with those substances, and now I've had the long term of, you know, 40 something years of just meditation practice. So I'm in a better position to say something about the relationship. What I would say is that psychedelics, whether it's, you know, LSD or mushrooms or whatever, what they are at best is they're like a movie trailer, you know, the coming attractions. Is it the same thing as the movie? Yes and no. It might have some of the same elements. It might give you some idea of what the movie is like, but it's compressed. And all the, you know, most flashy, spectacular, vivid parts are all kind of mushed together, and they hype up the volume and they hype up the music. And what we don't get there is the long arc of the plot development. All the quieter, deeper aspects, the theme, the actual theme of the movie, that can get lost in all the, you know, all the, the flashy colors. And the theme is this, just what we were talking about before, the self, the I, this awareness which is aware of all our finite experiences, but that awareness itself, this I, which is hearing these words on the radio right now, that I, that awareness, is boundless right now. You don't have to make it boundless, but by settling back into it, you more and more clearly start to recognize that it is and always has been boundless. And it really is possible to awaken to the fullness of that boundlessness and be living it in every moment.
Yeah, yeah, certainly you get the depth and the it becomes sustainable. I mean, it's something that goes beyond. It's not just temporary. But I just wanted to give the listeners a little example of the types of humor and what seriousness kind of thrown in there that you have in the book. Well, gosh, we're getting down toward the end of the show, but there's one meditative vehicle that I'd like to talk about before we close, and that is the meditating into sleep. As I mentioned earlier in the show, I had one of those nights where I tried the hard approach or the soft approach, and it didn't quite work. But if you wouldn't mind, chatting a little bit about that, the whole idea, the vehicle of meditating into sleep, because I know a lot of my friends also have the challenge sometimes of having broken sleep pattern. Sometimes they just so if you wouldn't mind, I think that's one of those valuable vehicles. That's like that's right up there with a high class, high priced luxury vehicle.
Yeah, right. There is kind of a specialized technique for meditating into sleep. And that is, and you can do this either sitting up in bed or lying down on your back. When you close your eyes in the darkened room, you'll notice that what you experience is not completely dark behind the eyelids. There's some vague sense of light, and that light may have some sense of color to it. It may have some sense of subtle flickering or scintillating, whatever it is. We don't try to change it or keep it the same, but we just rest the attention on that light. Just that. Just keep the attention on that light. And whatever else comes and goes in the background, as we said before, thoughts, sounds, bodily sensations, whatever, doesn't matter. Just ignore all that. Keep the attention on that light. And then as you start to fall asleep, if you're still sitting up, slide down into the bed, as you start to go into sleep, just keep the attention on that light for as long as you can. And it's that simple. One other tip is, this I got straight from a couple of my own teachers, is don't worry about whether you sleep or not at night. Even if you don't fall asleep, there's a kind of vicious circle, a thing that you may be familiar with, where you don't sleep, and so you start to worry that, oh, I'm going to be a wreck tomorrow at work. And then because you're worrying, you can't sleep. And then because you can't sleep, you're worrying, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It turns out that it's not really that important whether you sleep or not. If you just lie in bed or sit in bed and meditate, meditation brings such a deep state of rest that sleep, some of these really advanced practitioners, some of them actually don't sleep. They don't use beds at all. And so it's just good to know that. And that helps you to relax and not worry about it. And then ironically, it'll probably help you fall asleep.
Really, very much so. Well, gosh, this, I've really enjoyed our chat, Dean. I mean, I really enjoyed the book. When I was first looked at the idea of having you on, I'm thinking, boy, I've talked so much about meditation. What more could I say? But of course, I read the book. I thought, boy, what more can't I say? But it was really good. I really enjoyed it. Now, are there maybe any final thoughts maybe you might want to give the listeners that we didn't cover during this hour?
Well, I would like to invite people to visit my website, which is naturalmeditationbook.com. Also, the first thing, the first page that will bring you to, we've got a little two-minute cartoon which tells the whole story of natural meditation in this very sweet, droll little cartoon. And then on the same page, there's a link that you can click on to read the first chapter of the book right there on the site. So I'd like to invite everyone to do that. Also on my site, you can find excerpts from my other books. I wrote a book once called Why the Chicken Crossed the Road and Other Hidden Enlightenment Teachings. That one's a lot of fun. A book called The Zen Commandments and a book called Cinema Nirvana, Enlightenment Lessons from the Movies. And there I take movies where you'd least expect to find enlightenment teachings, such as Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs and Jaws, and show everything you need to know about meditation, enlightenment, spirituality. It's all in there.
Boy, I'm going to have to get that Cinema Nirvana. That sounds great. And of course, the Zen Commandments, I kind of chuckled with that, but that sounds like it would be a lot of fun too. So, and that is a cute little cartoon there on your page. I had a chance to look at it during the break, and it's great. You know, I think very much in the manner that you write your books, you know, that humor, I think, really gets the message across. Well,
yeah,
thank you,
know,
Dean.
Thank you, Robert. I thoroughly enjoyed this.
Well, it was my pleasure, and I'll be sure to recommend your book and put it on my recommended reading list on my website. So, again, I appreciate your time very much.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Dean Sleiter, author of Natural Meditation, A Guide to Effortless Meditative Practice. And again, like he mentioned, you can find out more about him and the book by visiting the website, naturalmeditationbook.com. Again, there is a direct link to that in the show page description. And as he mentioned, you can order the book there, a paperback, ebook, or audiobook. Read the chapter one excerpt, Meditation for the Rest of Us. And also you could schedule natural meditation book signings, talks, and workshops. All of that is available at that website. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again, thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me, that's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.